Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to be discussing our review of Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese's latest film, which is 16 hours long, in case you weren't aware. We're going to talk about some Halloween costume issues going on in Hollywood. And then our topic this week, what it means to be a film critic. This is going to be interesting. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Troy Heinrichs.
What's up?
What's up? And our Rotten Tomatoes accredited film critic, Amanda Sink, could not be here for this episode. But don't worry. We're still here. We got it covered.
That means she can't take the heat as a critic? Is that why she wasn't
That's what happened, yeah. Man. She freaked out. She couldn't do it.
For this episode, we only need one Rotten Tomatoes accredited critic.
Here. Present.
Right.
Although, apparently, I should have my license revoked, according to Twitter, or X, as it's called nowadays. But we'll get there. So basically, the reason we have the topic is I got fucking trashed on the internet. Trashed, because I liked a movie that apparently I'm not supposed to like. Interesting, as it were. We'll get there when we get there. That's our main topic, so just hang tight. We'll get there in a little bit. But how have you guys been?
Decent. I mean, a little sad about the Packers season and the way it's going right now. So shifting gears to maybe only watch the Packers in the half-hour condensed version because I have the NFL Plus subscription. So I could watch movies instead on Sundays.
That's as you should.
Does that mean you watch the Packers game at 3x speed or something?
No, it just means I only watch the plays. Play. None of that commentary BS.
No commentary, no commercials. Just go.
Yep.
Makes the game a lot faster, John.
Gives me more room for, you know, fit some Justified into my life.
Sure. I'm sure that's going to happen. You know, we had another bet that Taylor Swift was going to make $350 million domestic. Not going to happen, Chief. Have you accepted this yet or not?
Yeah, I saw the returns from last week and I was hoping that I saw some sold out shows on Saturday, sure. Actually. And I was like, you know, selling out some theaters, it's like, this might be okay. And yeah, not so much.
I mean, she said $131 million at the time of this recording. So, you know, as long as everybody that's been goes a couple more times, we should be good. It's not going to get there. It's not. I win again.
I mean, $150 million is nothing to sneeze at either.
I am not knocking how successful that movie's been. She's been phenomenally successful. At $15 million budget already made, you know, by the time you hear this, probably $150 million or so. She's doing fine. And yeah. She's got Travis Kelce on her back. Wait, sorry. I didn't mean it like that.
Or did you?
No, I did not. Mm-hmm. I just meant she's with Travis. She's winning, you know? He's a very good football player.
You just don't need to have any more reasons to have the internet come after you.
Right? Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Don't ever say anything positive about. That's all I'm saying. I should bleep that. I'm going to bleep the name. So when you listen to it, you don't even know what I said. I don't want to chance it. You know what I mean? It's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Can't wait to tell you guys more about that.
It was Amber Heard.
Shh. Do I got to bleep? I might have to just keep bleeping. I don't know. Damn it.
That's going to be the entire show is this
bleep, bleep, beep, bleep.
Man, I don't know what cuss words they're using right now because usually they just live letting stuff fly.
All right. Let's go to our movie and TV discussion because apparently I don't know if they've resolved the SAG strike or not by the time you hear this because, you know, sometimes people listen weeks after an episode came out. I don't know. But one of the things that they did that should not ever go unnoticed and unnamed, and it hasn't been, the industry's been blasting them for this, is they actually had one of their guidelines during the strike was that union members should not dress like struck characters for Halloween and post pictures online. So basically, Barbie is a studio movie. Don't dress like Margot Robbie's character. Don't dress like I Am Knuff. Don't dress like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. Don't dress like, I don't know, anything that's coming from a studio. And that is absolute nonsense. What say you guys? Even Ryan Reynolds had a great joke where he said, I can't wait till my 8-year-old and call her a scab. That was pretty fantastic. Isn't this going a little bit too far? I mean, I'm not asking you, do you support the unions or not support the unions? Whatever your position is fine by me, but that's somebody's private life, and that's not right.
You know, I took a look at this article, and I looked at the list of things they couldn't wear and what they could wear. You know, they were talking about, you know, it's okay to wear animated characters. It's okay to wear things that aren't Marvel or Disney owned. You know,
no, they want you to be generic. You can be a ghost. You can anything generic, but they don't want you to any real studio characters that are recognizable. Right. And that's bullshit. That's your private life. I don't care.
Well, you can do animated characters that just aren't owned by Disney.
That's bullshit. Nobody should be telling someone what they can do in their private time.
No, you're absolutely right. And I am not disagreeing. I'm just
being very clear. There's a dress code for unions now, apparently.
Right. That is garbage. I'm not really thrilled with the idea. And I don't know what they think they're accomplishing by saying this, like, but by making this a rule. It doesn't help anyone. It doesn't push their agenda any further by not dressing up as cartoon characters or not dressing up as these characters from the movies. It doesn't help anything to make this happen. So I don't understand why.
Well, the idea is they want to make it hurt for the studios, right? They don't want to do anything that helps the studios. But to me, that's imposing on family time because, and granted, they're saying your kids can do whatever you want. Look, I'm sorry. I don't care with what union I'm part of. Myself and my family are going to do whatever we choose as long as it's within obvious reason. And if I want to dress like the Flintstones, if I want to dress like Barbie and my wife and I want to dress like Barbie and Ken, right? And we have little kids. We want them to be little Barbies or something. Then we're going to do that. If I was even part of the guild, and I would just take pictures of them and send them directly to them and say, kiss my ass. I just find this to be infuriating because this is not what it's about. It's about trying to come to some kind of agreement and get what they need to get for actors. And I understand that this is imposing on their personal lives and trying to use their negotiating tactics as an excuse to justify it. And it just doesn't work for me. Personally,
it doesn't work for me either, because if they're just trying to make it hurt for the studios as much as possible, what they're doing, what the studios have already made their money once. And then if you go over the licensing fees for all the different costumes, if there are licensing fees, if somebody was buying a costume from, like, I don't know, whatever closed store opened up, but turned into the Halloween store, like the licensing fees, all that, the studio has already made all their freaking money. So it's not going to, this isn't doing nothing. This is doing nothing.
No, it's doing absolutely nothing, less than nothing. It's just all it's doing. Honestly, I think it's actually hurting their cause because it's making SAG look ridiculous. That's too bad. That's too bad because it's a noble cause. And I couldn't believe it when it came out, and I'm shocked by it. I'm shooketh, if you will.
You're shooketh?
I'm shooketh. Troy, you have an opinion or no? Okay. All right, well, we're going to move on again because movies are...
moving?
Yeah, they're moving. They're moving on again. Mission Impossible is Dead Reckoning Part 2, which is no longer going to be called Dead Reckoning Part 2. It's going to move to 2025 because of strikes are pushing things back. But, you know, A Quiet Place Day 1, it actually moved back 2 months for 2024. So that's actually coming out because that's a completed movie. But yeah, so we're already getting some of the delays. We're going to start seeing more of them as these strikes continue until SAG actually gets this completely handled. You're going to start keep seeing movies push out.
In the case of Dead Reckoning Part 1 or Part 2, it's interesting that how much has gotten in the way of making this movie happen, because they were filming it before the strike happened and they took a pause from filming before the strike happened to promote Dead Reckoning Part 1. And so here they are, they haven't been able to get back to work. They haven't gotten back to production or have done anything on the film because of the SAG strike. And it's been months now. So yeah, that's the big reason, because they're not even done filming this as far as this is concerned. So that, and how much work it goes into making one of these movies. So yeah, that's why they're pushing this back. It's just really it's a shame that things have to get pushed back and forth like this because of the strikes. I don't know. It's a little bit disappointing because I was looking forward to being able to see that movie before the end of the world.
End of the world. Jesus. Okay.
I just don't understand why, if they knew it was Dead Reckoning Part 1 and Part 2 and were planning it to be that way, why it wasn't shot and filmed as one giant movie, so that the editing is the only thing that needed to really be done in order to make it Part 1 and Part 2. So the fact that they weren't done shooting Part 2 by the time the SAG thing started, that's the part I just don't understand. Like, Peter Jackson can do like 300 movies at once. Why can't they do two movies at once for this? Okay.
He can't do 300 movies, number one.
Tom Cruise needs to take a few months off so that he can eat the babies he needs to eat to be able to be Tom Cruise still.
Fair.
That sounds gross.
What's Halloween?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know either. I just don't know why you would change the title when the first one was titled Dead Reckoning Part 1. So the next one's going to be like Mission Impossible, new shit? Like, what? Why wouldn't it be just Dead Reckoning Part 2? You literally have the title as Part 1. We never get to Part 2. I don't care if it is a direct sequel. I'm going to be confused the whole time. Like, why does it say Part 2?
Yeah, this movie doesn't stand on its own as far as an ending is concerned. So I don't understand why they have to change the name of it.
I mean, I guess maybe because Part 1 didn't do as well as they had hoped. You know, they got crushed by Barbenheimer. So they want it to stand on its own and make it seem like it's their own Mission Impossible movie, but I don't know how you would do that. I guess you could rewrite it so it still blends with this one, but also stands on its own. I'm sure they could do that. You're going to have to do like a serious recap at the beginning, though.
Yeah. Mission Impossible More Reckoning.
I like
that. Just keep reckoning.
Just keep reckoning. Ah! Okay. One thing.
Reckoning, because they're going to have to do that now, too.
Oh. Well played, sir. Well played.
I mean, the good news about this whole thing is that A Quiet Place Day One is going to move into the spot.
Yeah, and that looks exciting. It's got Lupita in it. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I kind of like the idea that they're going to keep the Quiet Place franchise going by going to the beginning when the aliens actually invade, which we saw a little glimpse of in the second movie. Mm-hmm. But just that the fact that it's going to be set in New York makes me like, you know, you could actually ruin it because, you know, Emily Blunt and John Krasinski are what made the movie really work.
Well, they're still going to make a part three after the strikes are over. They're supposed to be still making a part three. So you'll get their story eventually. Yeah. More of their story. Well, her story. Won't get much of his.
But that's a universe. That's a universe. Like when we were talking about franchises a couple weeks back, like that's a universe that could actually work really well for a long period of time.
Oh, sure.
Which is kind of like Walking Dead is still kind of working because you can tell different stories at different parts of the world.
Oh, shut your original mouth. Film. Is it though?
Dude, Daryl Dixon's show was good.
Yeah, but how many people are still watching it? That's what I want to know. Are they still watching that show?
I don't think it's 11 million or 15 million or whatever it was when it was in the heyday, but there's enough people that are still watching it. They're still making it.
All I want to know is when they pulled him out of the ocean, did he look clean?
I don't know.
Even salt water can't clean that hair.
Yeah, I guess not.
No, I think he was on the Demeter or whatever it was.
He was on the last voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah, that's where he was. I want to mention this because this is kind of cool. Daniel Radcliffe is exec producing a documentary about his former stunt double, who was paralyzed after an accident on the Harry Potter set called David Holmes, The Boy Who Lived. And Holmes was working on Deathly Hallows Part 1 when there was an explosion that was part of a planned stunt that sent him like plummeting to the ground and left him paralyzed from the chest down with a debilitating spinal injury that turned his life upside down. So Daniel Radcliffe is helping make a documentary kind of showing what he's gone through. And I just think this is phenomenal on Radcliffe's part because it shows that he has an appreciation for this gentleman who basically sacrificed his life for our entertainment. And we don't hear enough of these stories. Do you guys agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think anything that sheds a spotlight on anything the stunt coordinators do, especially one that might be a good heart tugging documentary in the case of this, I think it's good. I think it's really good for, you know, everyone to see what stunt coordinators have to go through and how they literally put their lives on the line every day that they do this job.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite things to watch when it comes to the making of the movies is the, you know, the lives of the people who aren't the main characters or the, you know, or on the screen that you know of. I like seeing all the background things happen when it comes to the movies. So this is something that I think is going to be a lot of fun to watch, even though the story is mostly sad. But Daniel Radcliffe and David Holmes have had a great relationship all this time because of the relationship they built from working together in the movies.
All right. Can't wait to see that. Patreon. Our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. Once you sign up, you do get immediate access to any bonus content in your respective tier. So now that you know what it is, if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider and help us out. Now we're going to go to our spoiler-free reviews before we get to our topic. And the review this week is one movie, but it's 3.5 hours long. It's 3.5 hours long. And some people think that that's a hindrance. I think it's a benefit. I kid. But the movie's called Killers of the Flower Moon. Troy.
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon is basically looking at the families that were involved in the founding of oil on the Osage Nation, where they were in Oklahoma. And this movie basically tells a story of a white man who came in and married into the family, and then basically for the sole purpose of trying to take over and ruin the Osage Nation's claim to the land, when an FBI agent tends to come in and then find out what the hell's going on with everything that's going down. As Aaron said, it's a very long movie, and it's basically, of course, the star-studded cast. You have, obviously, Robert De Niro is in here, Leonardo DiCaprio's in here, Jesse Plemons is in here. So really, at the end of the day, you know, with Martin Scorsese, or hashtag Marsco, as we have now claimed him, how did this all work with the star-studded cast? Sometimes all of these people coming together, and it's like everyone's grabbing for the spotlight, or sometimes it all comes together and it just works. Did Killers of the Flower Moon actually pull that off with this star-studded production?
It's tricky. It's a very horrible story, by the way, and it's a true story, which is saying something, that we still have horrible tales of what white people did to people of color out there that are this tragic, that haven't been told before, and this is one of them. It's grotesque, man. I mean, it's well told. It's extremely well acted. Leonardo DiCaprio is fantastic. De Niro, I think, is playing De Niro. I feel like he's the same guy and everything at this point, and I don't think that's much different here. Jesse Plemons is one of those actors where if he shows up, you feel like the movie's instantly better. That didn't change here. That's very accurate. But really, I think the movie belongs to Lily Gladstone as Molly, who is one of the Osage Nation's women. And for people that understand how this works, so many decades ago, there were Native Americans who owned land, and there was oil on that land. So bam, they're filthy rich, right? Like the richest Indians in the nation. And then white people had the idea to marry into their families to get head rights, because head rights are the rights to the land, and you could only get them by family. So you can only inherit them. So white men would marry Native Americans so they could get their hands on those rights. And then some men were killing those women or whatnot just to get those rights. It's a horrible story. It's beautifully told, though. Lily Gladstone as Molly, she marries Ernest Burkhart, who is the nephew to Robert De Niro's William Hale. And she runs the gamut. Like, her entire story kind of covers every aspect of this Osage Nation tragedy. Her sisters are being systematically eliminated, but no one will take it seriously. No one can prove it. And William Hale is somebody who knows a little bit more than he should about this whole situation. And it just goes down this whole rabbit hole of what these people did to these Native Americans. That is just, it's something to behold, man. I haven't seen a movie this tragic since 12 Years of Slave, but yes, the performances are wonderful, but it is too long. It's like an hour too long, easily an hour too long.
What did Martin do to ensure the, I guess, history and heritage of the Osage people? There was rumor that he actually met with the principal chief, Jeffrey Standing Bear, to discuss how they would be involved in the film's production. Do you think that he captured the Osage people in a proper way for this particular film?
Yeah, I think he really respected their culture and what happened with them. He worked with them directly to ensure that the depictions of their people and their culture were as true to life as possible. He really tried to respect the material. And I know some people feel like only people of Native American descent should be making this movie. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Martin Scorsese is one of the most talented directors working. He's perfectly suited to this story. And I think he does it as much justice as he can. It's just a hard story to tell. There's some clever touches. I do think he lets scenes and moments play out longer than he normally would. He has an undercurrent of a score, very much like Christopher Nolan in his movies, how he has that Hans Zimmer score like pulsating throughout the film where it just barely, you know, never stops. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
He does that throughout here. And there's little touches as the score goes where it, when we're focused more on the white people, it stays very, it's very steady. And then whenever it's focused on a Native American person, there's kind of like touches of flourishes from that culture. And it's just very subtle score. And I really, really appreciated that. And then he does something at the end where you kind of do a what's you do a wrap up of sorts. When you have like a big sprawling epic like this, you kind of do that wrap up, which tells where things went from here. And how he does that is extremely clever. I really love that. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but I thought that was kind of genius. So there's definitely some touches of magic here. It's just, there's too many scenes that we don't need. And when you're talking a movie this long, it really takes away from the impact by having it over long.
Are those scenes not needed because the wrap up specifically like really focuses on certain elements of the story? And so when you see the wrap up, you're like, well, I guess we didn't need that. Are you kind of like judging it based on the wrap up?
Redundant. There's a lot of redundancy there's okay. A lot of, okay, I already know this situation. I already know the story. I know where we're going. We don't need every single detail. Now I get, and I think in his mind, based on what I'm watching, right? I think in his mind, the more I show you that all these things happen, the more impactful it's going to be. Normally I could see that, but when you're talking like, when you get over 3 hours, you got to remember people's patience starts wearing thin. Like, and the pacing has to be tight. The pacing needs to be, we don't have anything extra here, you know, but if you have scenes that don't really impact anything and you're going back and forth and there's a little too much focus on the white people, if I'm being honest, like, I just feel like there should be more focus on the story of the Native Americans and what they're going through as opposed to Leonardo's story, William Hale's story. I already know who's awful in the movie. I want to know about the people that are suffering because of it. That's what I cared more about that. And I feel like that's lacking. And that's the more sadly interesting part of the story to me because it's so tragic.
Does he set the environment well, being that this is post-World War I, right, 1920?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel like that, or does it feel more like really Old West?
No, it feels very much the product of its times. It's very beautifully shot. I don't know where $200 million is at. This movie should never have cost $200 million. That's just, I don't understand. It's just not there unless we're talking—
Actor salaries?
Even De Niro and DiCaprio, like, how do you get to $200 million for this movie? This movie should— This feels like excess in terms, when you look at the budget, that's where you start going, that's excess. This is a $75 million movie at best, right?
Especially when you know the creator was half the runtime and $80 million.
Right. Yeah, that part's just insane to me. But it's beautifully shot. It just needed to be more tightly edited. And I think this, some people are raving that this is a masterpiece. I do not agree with them at all. I think it's very short of a masterpiece. It's a very good film that could have been fantastic. But the pacing hurts it.
What, 8.6 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 92% out of 320 some critic reviews, and it grossed $25 million in the United States over the, in a worldwide total of almost $50 million over the weekend. So yeah, it's going to be it's a Oscar film play kind of movie, right? It's not like a mainstream one for everyone to see, but if you're interested in oil and you're interested in post-World War One and you're interested in Native American culture, definitely something you would want to go check out in the theaters. Aaron, if you were to give a score, $10 full price of admission, what would you give Killers of the Flower Moon?
I give it $7.50. I definitely think people, if you don't want, because some people don't want to sit through 3.5 hours, and I have no problem sitting through a film that is 3.5 hours long or 4 hours long. It just, the pacing has to work. Like, it has to feel like I'm not looking at my watch every once in a while. And after you get about the 2 hour mark, I'm constantly looking at my watch. And that's how I know it's, because it's, the material is riveting. It's not boring me material wise. It's just the pacing. It's so hit and miss and up and down that it's not tightly edited. And that's where I think it's missing. That's where it keeps it from being that masterpiece it could be. But it's a freaking important story that I think anyone that's an American should know, because it's, we should be aware of this kind of history. And I was not aware of this history. I was not.
Yeah. And this is an Apple TV production released in the theater.
Apple TV Plus. Yeah. Plus. Theater, yeah. First, and then it's going to eventually come to Apple, but they don't have a date set yet.
Correct.
Yeah. But definitely watch it whenever it does get there if you don't see it in a theater. I do. Look, I've made plenty of jokes, and I get tired of Scorsese railing against anything that's not his type of film as not being cinema. I do agree that this movie should be seen in a theater because it's beautifully shot, and I think it's going to look better on a large screen than on your TV screen.
Do I need a larger screen? Is this a prime format, IMAX type experience? Or do you think a standard digital laser is good enough?
I think just typical digital is going to be fine. IMAX, I'm sure, will look great, but go see Taylor Swift in IMAX.
Please. Multiple times over the next week and a half.
Yeah, so he can win because he's struggling right now. He's struggling.
Swifties have failed me.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. That's all right. She's still going to be okay. Any recent film or TV recommendations you guys want to talk about before we move on to our topic?
I got nothing today.
Yeah, nothing that I picked up on new just because I've been catching up on all the old stuff.
Wow. Thank God for that writer strike.
Stop it, John. Stop it.
It's over now.
God, you're a horrible, horrible human being. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Okay, so let me tell you a secret. We're going to talk about what it means to be a film critic, but I have to give you some context. And for some context, I had two tweets that went out and over 150,000 total impressions, like 150,000 people apparently. I went viral, is what I'm saying, which is cool. Yay. So on the last podcast, you heard me review a movie called In the Fire, starring Amber Heard. I liked it. I'm sorry. I'm not ashamed of that. I enjoyed the movie. I watched it with other people. They enjoyed it as well. So I guess they're all assholes too, according to the internet. I don't know. But because of this whole Johnny Depp and Amber Heard thing, right? This big trial, blah, 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 blah. So I had a positive review on Rotten Tomatoes when so many other people had a negative review of it. Therefore, number one, I obviously don't know what I'm talking about. Even though that's just how critics work. Sometimes they like movies I like and vice versa. Or they like movies I don't like and vice versa. It happens. That's how the critic game works. So I had the review up. No big deal. And actually now I think there's more than one positive review. So I'm not alone anymore. So yeah, there's two of us. So that poor guy, Nestor, he's probably going to get chastised too. I'm sorry, guy. But anyway, I put my review up. No big deal. You know, did it on the podcast. Nobody really pays it much mind, but it goes up on Rotten Tomatoes. And of course, I'm a Rotten Tomatoes accredited critic. And my whole notifications are blown up on the Hollywood Outsider and on my personal Twitter. I'm like, what is happening? What did we do? What actually, more importantly, what did John do? What did he say that's going to piss somebody off? Because that's probably where it came from. Some offensive shit. And I'm going to have to go re-edit the podcast and hurry up and get that out before we get sued or something. And then, it was some Amber Heard fans retweeted my review and was saying, hey, you know, this guy likes it. Amber Heard is this, you know, that's great. Da, 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 da. And then the Johnny Depp people, I swear to God, that's all it is Amber Heard and the Johnny Depp people. Johnny Depp people started chastising me. And it started very, very fine. You know, as a critic, you hear this sometimes. People don't, they don't understand why you like a movie. They don't understand why you don't like a movie. And so they come after you a little bit. Usually it's just a little bit. This was nonstop the entire weekend, like nonstop. Emails, comments on the review, comments sent to me, emails sent to me, tons of tweets, blah, 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 blah. And just trashing me. I don't know how to, I should have my critic's license revoked. There's no license. What the fuck are you talking about? I don't know what I'm talking about. You're right. I've only been reviewing movies for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, whatever the number is. I've been bought. When does my check clear? Because I would like that. If that's a thing, I always love when people say that when you give something a positive review, oh, they've been bought. I got no fucking money. What are you talking about? And so it just went nonstop. And then and this was total coincidence. You guys remember that Variety had this other article out where it said Warner Brothers never fired Amber Heard from Aquaman 2. And they were basically just kind of like going after her again. And this Variety article, because some fans paid some money to get a hold of her transcripts from court so that they could go through it, and they reprinted all the negative shit from that, right? Remember this? Well, it happened right before that review came out. And I had made a tweet and I don't apologize for it. And I said, and I quote, at some point, regardless of your stance on this whole trial fiasco, it really feels like a whole industry has come crashing down on Amber Heard, and it becomes somehow okay to tear this woman down over and over. And I said, it shouldn't be okay. We all need to move on from it. Now, that's not a defense of anything she ever did or said or, you know, whatever happened in her and Johnny Depp's life. It simply is, this was a very bad breakup. There was a lawsuit. They're both adults, whatever. Move on. Why are we still trashing this woman? She's already been humiliated in court. They don't need to keep printing those articles just because it generates clicks. And if it was, it's just not okay to keep doing that to him or her. It's just not okay in general. I just think it was a bad relationship. Move the fuck on. Everybody, move on. Get over it. That's all that was. So because I had that, and it was coincidentally the same week as that review came out, had nothing to do with the other. Review was done before that article ever came out. So, haha, little do you know. But I had so many just shitty comments. I would attack you, just your obviously awful taste in movies. Nothing weird about picking polarizing movies, almost as if it's on purpose. Maybe it would have been more believable if the reviews were well-balanced and actually touched on something rather than barely scratching the surface of what you believe is good about her performance in this instance, which is not true. If you read it, I did do that. So you obviously didn't fucking read it. Whatever. I'm sorry. I'm swearing too much.
How do you really feel, Aaron?
The point is, she shouldn't be getting reviews or a spotlight in this way. That's the issue. I don't care how she performs. What she did is unforgivable and beyond opinion or simply looking past her personal life. That's not my job. As a critic, it's not your job to debate on how her personal... I don't give a shit what she did. I don't care what any of them did when you're reviewing a film. It's only what's on the screen that I care about. That's what you're supposed to do.
Just like in sports. Like, I don't care what happens in Aaron Rodgers' antics off screen, yes. Right? He's paid to throw the football and make touchdowns and win games. If he's blowing the football and making touchdowns and win games, I don't give a care if he's using meth off the... I mean, I hope he's not using meth, but, you know... It's the same thing. You're watching. We're here to do what we need to do, which is review the material and review the art, not review the antics off screen.
It's not about the reviewer, what you thought of it. The reason people are outraged is because she shouldn't be given a platform of any kind. It's an insult and a slap in the face to her victim, Johnny Depp, and to all the real victims that she exploited or mocked by pretending to be one of them. That's not how this works, man. And if you check, I gave Johnny Depp's last review, last movie, a positive review, Minamata. Look it up. Kiss my ass. That was like a year ago. If you can't or won't understand how the vast majority of decent people are totally repulsed by the very thought of this woman because of the vile things she has done and continues to do, then I cannot help you. Again, what does it have to do with my review? What does it matter? It has nothing to do with my review at all. And then there were some nice ones, of course, like never change how you review. Thanks for reviewing it. Thank you for your review. There's also very nice things, so I'm not discounting that. And I appreciate those people that were being supportive. But it just frustrates the shit out of me. And I've got a platform. I'm going to use it. So, yeah, I am going to tell you how I really feel. That's how I really feel. We're going to talk about what it means to be a film critic. I've talked a lot. I just wanted to explain the setup. I got trashed for like 4 days, basically. And I'm a really thick skinned dude. But after a while, it does start to wear on you. I can't imagine being one of those two. Jesus Christ. What's that like?
Especially when you were compared to Dexter at one point, weren't you?
Oh, that was actually really funny. So
it was funny.
Somebody, because there's a lot of memes and mean shit and da 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 da. And that's, yeah, it's okay. You don't like my review or whatever, but some of it was mean. But somebody did a comparison of my picture and Dexter's picture and said, anybody else see a connection? And they meant it to be like mean and shitty, but I thought it was hilarious. And I even told the person, I'm like, I don't even think this is an insult, but I appreciate this. This is very funny.
I think you missed the opportunity to reply to that and say, yeah, you remember how Dexter kind of like, you know, got lost in a hurricane and stuff. He came back. I'll come back from this too.
No, I just said, you know, it was funny. I gave him credit. I'm like, I know you meant this as an insult, but I appreciate it. It was funny. So speaking of you guys, you know, we've been reviewing movies for many, many years, blah, 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 blah. How do you determine the quality of a film when you review it, Troy?
I mean, for me, it's really sitting down and looking at, does the movie itself have a solid opening, middle, and end? Does it have a, you know, adequate runtime as far as the content presented? And do I feel like I was, you know, adequately satisfied with the amount of content received? Is it, does it leave me hanging, wanting a little bit more? Am I checking my watch the entire time? You know, do the performances seem real? Can I actually like lose who I'm watching? Like I have a problem, for example, with the live action remake of Aladdin, because I never see the genie. I just see Will Smith being Will Smith, right? Where you look at like A Quiet Place and I don't see Emily Blunt. I see this distressed mother who's trying to save her child and, you know, make sure that her kids are fine. And, you know, one, you know, can't hear. And she's like dealing with the grief of the loss of another child. And she's got this baby on the way. Like you just, you lose Emily Blunt completely. And all you see is this mother who has to fight for her life every single day. Like those are the movies I think that really stand out to you. So you're really analyzing, how do I feel about what I am observing? I've spent, you know, $15 to $20 on this art. I'm going to sit here for 2.5 hours and be lost in the art. At the end of it, do I feel good about that $15 that I spent?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's a matter of just what I see on the screen. I try to remind myself that anything that has to do with other people outside the screen or with the personal life, that's not really something that I really consider when it comes to reviewing anything. And if it's something that I walk in and I'm like, all right, well, so-and-so is an a-hole in real life, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to separate that. Well, then it's my duty to separate myself from the critical side of it. Because, you know, if I'm unable to detach either my love and appreciation or my disdain for whatever I'm whatever outside thing that is happening to the movie, whether it's a news story, whether it's content, stuff like that. If I can't separate myself, well, then I'm not going to really review it. But so long as I can sit there and let it go and just appreciate what I'm really seeing as fairly as possible, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. To me, when I'm determining the quality of a movie, the idea is that it only exists whatever is on your screen, whether movie screen, TV screen, whatever you're reviewing, whether it be film or TV, it has to be only that. So, and it should also be based on the intent of the filmmaker. Too often I see people that are amateur critics, I would say, and hey, you know what? Everybody wants their opinion to be public, and I understand that. People try. Not everybody is a good writer. Some people are just trying to get out there, and some people have wonderful followings that are not good at this at all, but that's what it's supposed to be. Film criticism is supposed to be the intent of the filmmaker. The movie is supposed to be based on what movie you're they intended to make. So if you go in and you want it to be something else, that's on you, and that shouldn't affect your review. So when I write a review, I know what the movie is about. As I watch it, I'm reviewing it based on the kind of movie that they're making. So if it's I don't like supernatural films, but if I watch one, I'm going to review it fairly, because it's not just about me. It's about what the filmmaker is making. And is this a good film for the supernatural genre? Does it have, is it telling that story of whatever that supernatural situation is in a sound way? Is it doing it from a very clever way? Is it written well? Is the dialogue strong? Are the performances strong? Are the effects great? Blah, 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 blah. All that stuff. Just what's on the screen matters. I don't care what the ghost did before he showed up to set. You know, I don't care how mean the ghost was at, you know, dinner last night. I don't give a shit. It doesn't matter. It doesn't apply to the film itself that you're reviewing. That's how you judge the quality.
Right.
Now, does anything
care what the ghost said?
I don't care. Does anything outside of the film influence my opinion? No. And I love all you support a monster and blah, blah, blah. Look, I don't have any dog in that fight. I didn't care about that trial. I don't care. If you want my honest opinion, I don't care about celebrity bullshit. I just don't care. And if you listen to my review, I said, I am not even really a fan of Amber Heard typically from her performances. She's good in that movie, and I don't really care what anyone says. And as I read other reviews after I had written mine and published it and da 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 da, a lot of mentions about that trial were in their reviews. To me, that is already tainting whatever you think. As soon as I see that mentioned, I already don't want to hear what you have to say about it, because you have a preordained opinion that should not be part of whatever you're writing. I take that seriously. What about you guys? Does anything outside ever influence you? It doesn't influence me. Does it influence you?
I don't think I've run into a situation where anything from the outside has ever influenced me. It's hard to remember all the different reviews. I usually sit there and let whatever's on the screen just wash over me. So yeah, I don't think, well, with the exception of, I don't know, if my own fandom probably gets in the way of some of my reviews. So as we all know, I'm a Godzilla fan, but I think I score Godzilla movies fairly. I had a huge love for Star Wars. I think I know I definitely score most of that shit fairly.
Tell me how you really feel.
I mean, there was a little bit of a slant downward on the Boba Fett, but you know.
Yeah, Boba Fett, you could not rate fairly.
Yeah, Boba Fett, I wasn't going to rate fairly, and I was never going to be able to rate that fairly. Oh, good call, actually. I didn't even remember the fact that I hate that goddamn character.
What about you, Troy? Anything?
I mean, yeah, you try to look at each film individually. I mean, I think most people that have been around the Hollywood Outsider long enough know I'm the one that usually does the Pixar reviews for the latest Pixar movie that came out. I didn't actually do Elemental because I missed it the weekend that it came out because I was on a cruise. Had to watch it later.
Wonderful cruise, but, by the way.
Yeah, it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we do that again, you're all coming with us. We're not paying for you, but you're all coming with us.
In spirit.
Because I'm not paying for you.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I try not to compare. Like, I know Pixar can do this level of work, and I know the people at Pixar can do this level of story. So I come in expecting Pixar movies to be at a higher level to begin with. And when they don't hit that bar, I kind of maybe bag on the movie a little bit, and I probably shouldn't do it from that perspective. Luca is a great example. I'm sure Luca is a really great story for somebody. I thought it was probably one of the worst Pixar movies I've ever seen. It was just very contrite. It was the boy version of The Little Mermaid. I mean, it was very not Pixar, you know? It felt like maybe a knockoff DreamWorks or something. I don't know. But that's me bringing that Pixar lens to a Pixar movie, right? So should I be doing that? Maybe, maybe not, because it's a Pixar movie that's being reviewed. M. Night Shyamalan's probably the same way. Like, I know M. Night Shyamalan has greatness. I know he has missteps. But there's a formula for M. Night Shyamalan movies. And so you kind of probably have that in the back of your mind as you're watching the movie. Like, there's going to be the M. Night Shyamalan formula here, and you're looking for the formula. And when the formula doesn't work, you're like, nah, that movie sucked. So, you know, I try not to bring anything from the outside, but I think there's that perspective, right? Just like,
at least you're being honest. I think that's fair.
You know, Aaron's got the Miles Teller, Darren Aronofsky issues, right? You know, and maybe that's the thing. Maybe I should be doing Miles Teller reviews and Aaron should be doing Pixar reviews.
But see, I honestly, I try to take those because I try to challenge myself to make sure that I'm fair. Like, one of the reasons I even took that Amber Heard movie, I swear to God, was because I knew it wasn't going to be reviewed fairly because of that whole trial situation. Even though I didn't really follow it, I didn't care. None of that stuff matters to me. You know, people were even pulling up old jokes I made during the trial. I'm like, so your first time on Twitter, like, you didn't make stupid jokes. I didn't have to follow it to make jokes, jackasses. All right. Jesus Christ. That's what you do on Twitter.
It was everywhere.
Yes. And it was a pretty clever joke. I said something along the lines of, there should be an Amber Heard date alert. I think that was funny. You know, I didn't mean anything by it. Didn't mean it was just timely. I would have said the same thing about a Johnny Depp, and it still would have been as funny. It's just Amber Alert. It's not as catchy as Johnny Alert, you know, because Amber Alert's a thing. Duh. Anyway, so I took their review because I thought the movie wasn't going to be judged fairly, and I think it's important. I take film criticism seriously, and I'm not saying everybody has to. Everybody that does a podcast doesn't. It's me. I take it very seriously, and I thought that she deserved to be reviewed fairly in the movie for good or bad. And if it would have been bad, I would have reviewed it that way. And it wasn't like a stellar review. It was a 6.5, for Christ's sake. But she gave a good performance, and she should be given credit for that. It's got, again, nothing to do with any outside force. I just don't get why some people can't separate. And we had that whole conversation. We had an whole episode about this like a few weeks ago, right? Can you separate the art from the artist? Maybe we should have made the whole thing about Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. Never seen anything like it. But one of the things that I saw many, many times is that I was bought. This is my favorite thing ever. So let me ask you guys, have you ever had your review bought? Be honest.
All the time. I mean, how do you think I afford my life? I mean, I If I had been bought, oh, I'd so take the money.
Jesus Christ.
I would so take the money.
Send me a check.
Send me a check. That is John at the Hollywood Outsider. I'll get you. You know what? Forget that. I'll get you my Gmail later, but so I can get you my address to send the check to, or you can Zelle me. You can Zelle me. I don't care. I'll take it. But no, I've never had a review bought, though I do love when, like, my very first, I'll never forget this. My very first review was, I forget the name of the movie now, but my very first review that I did got picked up for the poster. And I was like, are you kidding me? My very first review, they love my review that much. They wanted like a couple of lines for their poster. I'll take it. And yeah, that felt very cool, but I've never been bought.
People have tried for sure. We got a close friend of ours that has had a movie and a TV show out, and you know, I've gotten the emails post the review going up going like, well, that's not really what we're trying to do. That's not really what happened. And I'm like, look, I watched the movie. If it didn't work and I'm commenting on that, it didn't work or it didn't come across the way that you thought it was coming across, that's because that's how I saw it. Right. It's not saying that the movie was bad or not as good. It just didn't hit the way that you thought it might have. And that's just critical feedback for next time. You know, it doesn't mean it wasn't a bad movie. I enjoyed the film. I think I gave it a 5.5 or a 6, you know, which doesn't mean that it's awful. It means that it's a thoroughly enjoyable watch.
Yeah.
I bought the movie because I thought it was an enjoyable watch. It had some things that needed work on.
People really don't understand how scoring works sometimes. I mean, 5 is average. That's not a bad thing. You know, you're basically looking out of 10. We rate on a 10, and 5 is average. You know, anything over anything 3, 6 or better is good. Like, that's a recommendation. Anything less than 6
is a 3-star scale. Yeah. Is like a 3-star scale would be a 2. A 5-star scale would be a 3. A 10-star scale would be a 5.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just how things
go. It means you did your job.
Yeah.
Wasn't spectacular.
Five is very average. Yeah. 650 is a good movie. I enjoyed it. It doesn't mean that it's great. It's not going to be the most memorable thing in the world, but it's, you know, solid. You start getting like 7.5 and 8 and everything else. That's when you start going good. I hate thumbs up and thumbs down. That's just the laziest way to review. Sorry, Ebert and Siskel.
Yeah, I am a fan personally of the even numbered scale, because when you have an even numbered scale, there's no fence post sitting, right? It's either it was good or it was bad, or it was superb and it was absolute shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. 4-point scales, I think, are usually the better way to look at things, because you have to stake bad, okay, good, best. Right. There's no, it was either good or bad. It's like, that doesn't tell anybody anything.
So I will tell you, as somebody who's been doing it for, you know, well over a decade, no, I've never been bought, never been solicited. I've had people, especially independent people that are just trying to get their movie out there, they've approached me and asked me to review them and been super nice to me to try and, I'm sure, court favor a little bit, which we're going to get into in a second. But in terms, no one's ever offered money. I mean, you every once in a while you'll get, do you want to come to the set and stuff like that? And I don't do those. So it's just not something I'm interested in. But, you know, legit matters.
If they're paying for it, I'll come.
No. John, they don't pay for it. They just
because that's the thing. It's like, I could get a free copy of the movie to review it. I'd rather pay for the movie on my own, because then I'm not, you know, feeling like I'm obligated to give this thing a review because I got a free copy of it. That's why I bought the movie that I reviewed, because I didn't want to be accused of actually taking a gift.
Right? Well, I get screener links. That's part of film criticism. I mean, I get screener links all the time. But
that's being done by the distribution company, not by the actual film creator.
PR company, sometimes distribution, like, you know, Lionsgate or somebody like that. It just depends. It always depends. But I still have to review
it fairly. But that's part of the machine, right? That's not like, hey, my buddy, you know.
No, that's not independent. That's just the typical studio stuff.
And maybe that spot in line at Southwest, you know, could you like, you know.
I've never been bought. The studios routinely court us for positive coverage. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. I'm trying to take you guys behind the scenes, I guess, just because this is such a big deal, such a nonsensical big deal. What happens is, for me in particular, because I am Rotten Tomatoes accredited, which makes a difference from a lot of criticism, because they do want the score to be influence, right? Because the more positive reviews you have, the higher the score goes, and that helps them sell the movie. That's what PR companies want. That's what studios want. But they don't court. You get a press release. Do you want a screener link? If I have time for it, or if one of these guys have time for it, whatever it is, then we say yes. We get a link. That's it. That's the end of it. Sometimes they'll ask for proof of coverage because they want to see the reviews that come through on their movies. And I totally understand that too. But no, they don't court you trying to solicit your positive review. They're very nice because that's what sales is. Like, they're trying to get their movie in front of enough critics to hopefully help their film and have people enjoy the experience. But if you've been doing it long enough time, you have to be fair about it or you don't get more screeners.
Oh, there was that one time that one guy wrote back because apparently my review was too harsh and I didn't understand Panamanian culture.
Oh, right. And you were from Panama.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens. And any bad review I've written, I've gotten plenty of messages about them, you know, over the years. It happens. And you just have to take it and say, hey, that's just my fair review. I mean, granted, it's nice to be on a Blu-ray cover or poster and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's pretty neat. But I'm not going to write a review just to hopefully get on, just to hope for that. That's just not why I write them. It's a lot of work to write a review. And it drives me nuts when people think that you would do that. And I'm sure some people do that. That's probably not fair, but you know, I have integrity over this, whether you believe it or not. I don't really care, but I do. So should any outside elements matter in a movie? That's my next question. Should they?
I mean, it's a tough one for me, right? Because I'm watching the next Pixar movie because I like Pixar movies. Like, I've grown to expect my Father's Day weekend to be spending it with my kids watching a Pixar movie. So yeah, if I'm watching an M. Night Shyamalan film and I'm like, ooh, Signs was good. And I really liked Sixth Sense and Lady in the Water is a really great movie. And I like all of the Unbreakables, you know, Split into Glass. You know, Glass wasn't the best, but it still finished up the trilogy really well.
I enjoyed it.
Like there's just things that you're going to bring into that because of what it is that you're watching. Right. I mean, I don't think there's a way to completely block it out. You're comparing even Star Wars, right? You're comparing all of the Star Wars universe in this new thing that you're reviewing and going, is this thing comparable to Star Wars of old, Star Wars of new, Star Wars of recent? Does it fit into the timeline? So I think that there's a place for certain things to be brought in. But when you're saying, I am reviewing this actor in this role and I'm reviewing this director in this moment of how we put the film together, then you have to look at it as the independent content and block all the rest of that stuff aside.
Hey, I got a quick aside here to throw in. Did you throw Lady in the Water in because you like that movie or because you're making fun of me?
No, I love Lady in the Water.
Okay.
Amanda hates that movie.
All right. Just want to make sure. I knew somebody hated that movie and I love that movie, but
it's quirky as all get out. Don't get me wrong. Right. But I mean, like when it like all comes together at the end, you're kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like once the ending gets done and everything. Kind of,
yeah. I mean,
I'm like,
you don't have
to
sell me,
I see what I see what he was trying to do. And it's like, it's not a great film, but it definitely has the M. Night Shyamalan, you know, wow factor at the end, I guess, unlike The Happening, which didn't happen.
Say hello to your mother for me.
Anytime there's something outside of a movie influences me, if I cannot separate myself from any sort of outside influence, then I can't do the review. I'm trying to think if I have any examples of this happening. I think the only one I can think of is the food, Seth Rogen food animated movie. Sausage Party. That one, the outside of the movie thing that happened with that one was that the animators were essentially worked to death to make that happen. And and on top of that, not only were they worked to death, but they didn't get paid the amount of money they should have been paid. There was a lot of other background things that happened to the artist. Because I am somebody who knows a lot of animators, somebody who has been gone to school with a bunch of animators, somebody who at one point could have been an animator, like I saw that as something I could not separate myself from, and I couldn't watch that movie for that reason.
And I'm sure it's from years of doing it, but I can compartmentalize. I don't take my baggage into a movie, even if it's, and I don't care about the overall arc of like Star Wars or Marvel and whatnot, each movie should be taken as an individual. So if I go in and I'm rating that movie based on that movie, so if it should be based on everything I see there, it should count. Now, if there are, if it's matching up to a bunch of pieces that I don't know because they haven't done a good job of informing me of those pieces, that's on them. That's not my problem. That's not, that is part of the movie. It's missing in part of the movie. So that's fair game to me, but I can compartmentalize. I always try to see movies that I normally would not necessarily enjoy, but if it's a director that challenges me, if it's a topic that challenges me, I try to do that because I think it's important to try and keep your mind as open as possible. My only exception to that is I don't see Wes Anderson movies for review. And that's typically because I just have not enjoyed any of them. And I feel like I'm doing it a disservice to the filmmaker by reviewing a movie when I already know I'm not going to like it, because for whatever reason, his style just doesn't speak to me personally. So getting approved through Rotten Tomatoes, you know, this is also one of the things I got. Anybody can be a Rotten Tomatoes critic. No, they cannot. They just simply cannot. I'm tired of hearing that, and I'm tired of having to explain it. So I'm going to explain it here. There's a whole process you have to go through to be approved on Rotten Tomatoes. Amanda's the other Rotten Tomatoes approved critic on the show. These two guys aren't, because they don't write enough reviews, because you have to have a minimum to even get in the door. And then it has to do with your content, how you review, how fairly you criticize, what your scores are, like how often you write reviews, that you have to have so many a year and blah, 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 blah. All these things matter, and you have to go through a whole review process. And then here's the trickier part, and I think an important distinction. If you work for The Hollywood Reporter, you get a job as a critic for The Hollywood Reporter, you can get approved that day through the outlet. That's different. I'm approved as an individual, which means it doesn't matter the outlet. I can go anywhere and I'm still approved as a film critic because I've met the criteria for an individual. Most people that are critics that you see are under the umbrella of an outlet. That's different. The outlet gets approved because they're a mass media publication. So they've already gone through the criteria of the established reviews and da 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 da. And they're responsible for maintaining credibility, integrity, and making sure that their writers are responsible. I am approved as an individual, so I am responsible for that. I am responsible for my integrity, and I'm responsible for my output, if you will, just like Amanda is. Yeah, same situation. Those things are very integral to being approved, so it's a lot harder for an independent individual person to be approved as a critic through Rotten Tomatoes than it is for someone who just gets a job at Hollywood Reporter or Variety or Deadline or any of those major outlets, or even smaller outlets that just have major output, because we're an independent outlet. Hollywood Outsider isn't as big as those. So that's how I'm approved. It's harder than it is for anyone that gets a job at an outlet. So don't tell me it's easy, because you have no idea what you're talking about. And that's the most infuriating claim, because it's so lacking in information. It's just all bad info. If you say that to me, I'm already going to ignore you because you don't know what you're talking about, and I'm tired of seeing it or hearing it. There. Was that too snotty? I hope it was.
Yeah, I totally came off that way.
Good.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know what? I can't speak to any of that.
All right, so back to fun. I'm sorry. I'll try to say it less snotty. It's hard. Is that good?
You have to have enough reviews under your belt. You have to have enough respect in the community. People are getting approved to be an approved critic on Rotten Tomatoes have done the work.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You like, just like you go out and you like train for a sport or train for the Olympics, they're there because they've done the work. If you're an approved critic, you've done the work. Therefore, you commenter on Twitter have not done the work. Therefore, you do not have anything to say. It's an opinion. I guess you're free to say it because social media exists, but it's just that, it's an opinion.
You've been bought.
Yeah. If you have that opinion, you've been bought for sure.
For the $8 to get my review approved with the blue check mark, then maybe I've been bought, but.
Oh man, I did that for Ho just because so we could have the edit capability. I didn't care. That edit capability is awesome. Thanks, Elon. So what has been the most difficult film to review for you and why? Either one of you, if you've had one that really was a struggle for you. Because I can tell you, mine's in the fire, and it's because of what happened afterward.
Overall, I think my harder reviews of them or the reviews where I find myself not really enjoying the movie. Because I'm usually looking for things to at least not destroy them with, because I don't want to be that person that writes that way. Unless you are the guy who made The Giving Tree, which fuck you and fuck you very much.
I think it was The Family Tree. I don't even think you have the right movie title.
I think it was The Giving Tree.
No, it's The Family Tree. Looked it up.
Is it The Family Tree?
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's how much I didn't like writing that review. I don't even remember it. And also that guy coming back to us and saying, Aaron, you need to rewrite this.
Oh, yeah, I love that. No, we're not going to rewrite the review because you didn't like it. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened a few times.
The most difficult film to review for me, maybe it was the No Man of God one. Because it's something that I don't typically watch on a regular basis or do. Plus, I'm not a big like true crime type person. And obviously, Ted Bundy having a lot of crime actually happen perspective to it. That one, I think, was like, I don't have an angle, right? Because usually it's my kids in Pixar, or it's like, I like mystery boxes. So Shyamalan fits my thing. There's just a lot of, like, there was nothing. Like, I had to watch the film for the film. I mean, obviously Elijah Wood being in it, helped a little bit because I had some background on Elijah and I had some background on who Ted Bundy was and the situation and whatnot. But I was able to sit back on that one. And that one was like, I needed an angle to come from. And then the angle that ended up happening was that it was all based on the title of the movie, right? No Man of God. So if man was created in God's image, like, do we have the potential to be super, super great? Or do we have the potential to be super, super evil? Like the fall of man happened, and then kind of went on it from a biblical angle, and that got me going on writing the actual review. So I think that was probably the hardest one I did. But it was a super great movie at the end of the day, and probably one of my better reviews because of it, because I didn't have preconceived notions coming in.
That's good. That's important. I think the worst one, it was worse than even the Amber Heard situation, was, is that when I wrote, it wasn't even a review, it was an article I wrote. The new Ghostbusters will not destroy your childhood, when that female Ghostbusters was coming out. And I just got just trashed. That's back when Twitter was more entertaining and more fun. But just got trashed. And because for whatever reason, people just hated that. And that was before the movie came out. It came out. And I remember, I'll never forget, because Paul Feig, who directed the movie, actually sent me a direct message on Twitter telling me how much he appreciated the article and that it seemed like I understood what he's doing, what he's going for, before the movie even came out. And it was just a very, very nice thing, because I think he saw how the reaction was. Very similar to this one. Just people reacting that hadn't even seen the movie. I mean, they're reacting before the movie was out, so I know they hadn't seen it. Because I saw it on the screener link, so I know it wasn't out. But it's just wild how some of these things play out. So there you go. That's what it's like to be a film critic. And does it ever bother you when people don't like your opinions? Does it ever bother you, like, sharing them on this weekly basis? And if people don't like them, they come and tell you or anything like that. Does that bother you guys?
I mean, I get told I'm wrong all the time by you, so I'm pretty used to it.
That's fair.
John has pretty thick skin. I read a book called The Four Agreements. The Four Agreements basically come down to understanding that, the world is connected and everyone is connected in the world. And so to treat everybody kind of with respect. So the four agreements are, be impeccable with your words. Don't make assumptions. Don't take things personally, and, always do your best.
That sounds so stupid. Jesus. I'm sorry, Charlie.
It's a little woo woo. It's a little foofy, no, but at the end
like
of the day,
it's good. I like it. I like it. I just couldn't help myself.
Do you miss the time, though, when we could have a difference of opinion and we had real conversations about it, like we do here? We don't have to agree on it, but I feel like, we can still do that here. I don't feel like you can do it in the world as much nearly anymore, and it's just becoming exhausting to some degree. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do miss the days in which we could have a conversation about things, because now all we do is we take in these 5-second videos about whatever it is we want to already agree on, and that's the absolute truth. And as soon as we hear somebody else has a different opinion on it, we want to start a fight. It's never really a conversation. It's never really a why do you see that way, or what is it that makes you feel that way, or what did you see that I didn't see to make you do this? No. It's always I've seen the absolute truth, and you're the idiot. I'm exhausted by it.
All right. Well, I think on that note, we're going to wrap this bad boy up. I hope you guys, I had to get that off my chest, so I'm sorry if we offended somebody at some point, but.
No, I just love the fact that, you know, people were mean to Aaron, and Aaron goes, well, I have a platform and I'm going to use it.
I mean, this just goes to show Aaron's actual, this is what I dealt with Aaron for like almost 11 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's an egomaniac, and so he's just going to basically say, you know what? This whole episode is going to be about me.
Aaron's like, you guys want to be petty? I'll show you fucking petty.
You better correct that, you son of a bitch. I am not an egomaniac.
He is the nicest man in the world, and he does his job really, really well, okay, and that's why he gets invited to go to Southwest by Southwest.
He doesn't get invited. He goes and signs up for it. Calm down.
I go as press.
It's still an invitation.
You don't just get to go, jackass. Yeah. You have to be accepted. Earn that. Vetted.
And his quotes are like on movie posters and like, you know, the social media stuff, like for John Wick 4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he's got a right to say what he wants to say.
That one was pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. Like that was pretty cool. Pretty good feeling to be on John Wick 4. And the TV commercial.
Yeah, I shared that with all my friends. I was like, you see this? This is a Hollywood Outsider underneath it. They're like, yeah, so? I'm like, that's my podcast, dummy.
Yeah, there was one movie that you got on the box cover art. I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was you or Amanda. I think it was you, the family one.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have watched that movie if Aaron's quote wasn't on the box. And it was a great movie.
Right. I wish more people would see that one. I really like that movie.
Let's say you didn't know Aaron.
What was the name of that movie? Because I can't remember.
It's called Family.
It's called, yeah.
Yeah, it's called
Family.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good movie.
It was a very good movie.
I know that because I recommended it. Boom.
You know what, Aaron? I'm pretty sure somebody's mad at you for that. I'm sure there's people who...
You know what? As soon as I said Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, there were at least 3 people mad at me.
Who's Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp is... Well, that's when he puts on the Jack Sparrow stuff, right?
Oh, that's Johnny Depp?
That's Johnny Depp. Oh, my God.
You've been pulling a me all night tonight where you're like conflating words. You're,
just so irritated. Like, all of it just irritated me because you can't respond on Twitter because everything. I tried like very nicely, to be eloquent with my words and everything else. And it just made me, and I finally just said, you know what? If I mute this, I don't have to respond to it. And that's what I did. And then no more.
Oof. Right.
I'm like, I'll address it whenever I do a podcast. And actually, I was going to do it sooner. And devoted listener Christina Flores is a Patreon supporter. Thank you, Christy. She actually was asking me a question about something or other. And I told her that was our next topic. And she said, wait a couple weeks because let it calm down. Let it get out of your system a little bit because otherwise you might be more reactive. More so than I already am. So she's probably right. And I appreciate Christina. That advice. Christina, I was ready to burn the whole thing down. I'm like,
so much fun.
I'm going to tell you motherfuckers what I think. Hang
the podcast would be over with. Or we would have more fans. That's the only way it would go. Podcaster blows up. And then all of a sudden we're getting paid by Spotify to be on their thing.
Ah, finally we're bought. I'm in.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Why not?
See? I mean, you could have. This is. I blame Christina, honestly.
Well, thankfully she supports us.
Yay. Speaking of supporting us, you too can support a couple of bot film reviewers and a Rotten Tomatoes accredited whatever the hell he is by going to patreon.com/ The Hollywood Outsider. You can join one of our tiers and you get stuff.
That was a great sales pitch. It's time to go. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. And go watch In the Fire. Stick it to the people that don't like it. or don't, because I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I give up.
You just, you know, live your life. Just do your...
Do what? Did Troy just stop talking? What?
Well, John was going, so I paused.
I was mid-sentence, and he started to cut me off, and I shut up, and he's like, oh, shit, I did it.
Hey, at least he's being conscious of it.
He's
growing. He's,
yeah, mid-sentence, but yes. All right. All right. Never mind. Go ahead, Troy. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, why can't you all just let Aaron be?
What is
which
that?
Doesn't work on a non-video podcast, but
I don't understand what just happened at all. No, I don't.
It's the Amber Heard, like, I stepped on a bee.
Oh my god. Oh. No. God damn it, yeah. Troy. Not you son of a bitch. I'm out. Bye.
Now the Johnny Depp people are back on our side.
Exactly.